So imagine I just go up to someone with a microphone and say, you know, virtual reality, what do you expect? What would you do if you could do whatever you want? And the person in the grocery store says, I don't know, maybe time travel or something. And then you do whoosh, and then you show 1920s Berlin or you show something else, right?
Been there, done that.
Second life.
Second life. Been there, done that. May or may not meet your expectations since 2003. I'm Chris Lehman, and you're listening to the Drax Files Radio Hour with Joe Yardley.
Hello there and welcome to the Drax Files Radio Hour with Joe Yardley. My name is Draxter Dupre. I'm here with Joe Yardley as usual. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
And a little bit later, Chris Lehman of botanical fame will join us for the hour. Chris makes trees and plants and water lilies and then some more trees. So, Joe, you were on a boat trip with SL Go last week, you told us.
Yep. My parents have a lovely 1930s sailing boat, and we went sailing from Amsterdam to The Hague.
I'm not interested in the real world. I'm just interested if SL Go works.
My mother has one of those iPad thingies, and now that SL Go is available on iPad, I thought I'd give it a go. But unfortunately, in the middle of the Dutch canals on a 1930s boat, there was no internet whatsoever. And even with, even SL Go can't help you if you've got no internet.
It's not Online's fault, not Lindenlab's fault that it didn't work.
Just the way of the universe.
Right. Just socialist Netherlands. I got it. Cool. Yep. Great how we sort of wrapped in this, you know, kind of sandwiched in this little commercial, commercial content into the editorial content. Aren't we brilliant?
Yeah, very subtle.
Also, yesterday you had a visitor in 1920s Berlin with the DK2, a journalist, I hear. Is that true?
Yes. We had a little request from Lindenlab if they could walk around 1920s Berlin with a journalist. Trying the DK2. So unfortunately we don't know anything else. Don't know who it was or what it was for. This poor person was dropped right in the middle of a very, very rowdy happy hour with a DK2. So that must have been quite the experience.
I can see the headline already, whatever publication that is. Trash talk in 1920s Berlin. Oh my. You also had someone visit Berlin with the DK2. This guy posted a video on YouTube, which is interesting. I mean, it's just he went up and down Berlin, the Berlin streets, and you can see the pretty accurate tracking that the DK2 has.
Yeah, he very clearly describes all the technical details and what he likes about it and what isn't quite working quite right yet. So it's very interesting for everyone interested in how you use the DK2 in Second Life and the Second Life DK2 viewer.
It's great also that people in general make more content in Second Life. You know, we really got to flood the YouTubes because the other content is out there and there's very little content from Second Life, and the DK2 just works. But it's funny, I want to play a little soundbite because this guy really, you know, talks about the pitfalls. One of the pitfalls when you have the DK2 in Second Life. Here's the soundbite.
That's the thing about the virtual reality mode, that you're probably behaving a bit asocial, antisocial, because it's not easy to chat. So people probably think you're walking around like a moron or something.
That's true. I mean, I've only tried the DK1. Until we can actually really fix this communication problem, this will remain an issue. I'm sure it can be fixed. I'm sure there are quite a few solutions.
There's quite a few things that we had talked about. I mean, you thought you were talking about a keyboard that kind of appears mid-air, maybe.
Yeah, and, you know, an in-world virtual keyboard where you can just type with your fingers, your virtual fingers. That could be a solution. Or, implement some sort of software that converts voice chat to text and vice versa. Yeah,
which is built in the Mac operating system, by the way. Loki had pointed it out.
Yeah, and that works really well, and that will be a very good solution, because even if people can use voice or type in Second Life, of course, quite a few people don't want to.
And if you could only see your hands in virtual reality, which brings me to our little forward promo for today's show, because we're going to have a brief interview with David Holtz from Leap Motion, our little motion sensor device that you can now glue onto your Oculus, and you can actually see your hands in virtual reality. Of course, not in Second Life yet, maybe never, maybe hopefully, probably pretty surely in Second Life 2.0. The audio of the David Holtz interview, I just want to say, is a bit wonky. I had to cut it down quite a bit, but we still have some good bits. And I've been told that we can do a follow-up of that interview sometime soon as well. Real quick, couple housekeeping notes. You can get in touch with us via Drax Files, the avatar. You can send us scoops, press releases, hate mail, your voicemail on Skype, Drax Files. Send us MP3 audio to radio@draxfiles.com. You can support the show by becoming an individual sponsor, a voluntary subscriber, as we call it, for $100 linen per month. That's $25 linen per show. I'm going to send you a really neat little payment reminder device made by Chris Lehman, who's going to be later here on this very show. You can also subscribe to Stitcher or iTunes. If you subscribe on Stitcher, you can fast forward through my rants where I try to subliminally convince you that socialism is the way to go and capitalism is the end of it all. You know, as you know, that this show is just a disguise for my political agenda.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, some commenters have pointed that out and it must be true. It's on the internet.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll go out this episode with the Internationale. When I grew up, when I was a little girl in Holland, we were actually, monitored by the security services because my parents went to a party at the Russian embassy. And ever since, we've got a file at the security services.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
I never thought I would be nostalgic about the Cold War, but, you know, looking at the mess the world's in today, the Cold War wasn't that bad.
Yeah. No, there's something to be said about black and white. I mean, I don't have to tell you that. You live in the 20s.
Exactly.
Bring back black and white, please. Maybe the metaverse should be black and white, too.
Get back on topic.
This is just in. Apparently, there's podcasting in virtual reality. There's an article on BBC in the technology section that Podrift is the new thing. It's podcasting and VR. Joe, you won't believe this. You know, it's being proposed by a guy named Leonard Burton that it would be a cool idea if people would do a podcast in virtual reality.
That is the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
Let's be serious. Of course, we understand why Second Life is being ignored, because it's not a true VR.
No. We had the discussion and we decided. We talked with our friend from, Road to VR.
Exactly.
And in the end, even he agreed.
He did, but
so
the BBC...
It has been decided. It is official. Everyone in the world, if you're listening, Second Life is virtual reality. We have decided it is now, law.
Then you call the BBC tech desk and tell them. I want to briefly quote from this article because I want to point out one thing that really annoys me. Of course, the guy, you know, I would like to have Leonard Burton, who is behind the Podrift idea. I want to have him on the show because, you know, it's interesting. Of course, it would be really cool if we do it like we did, Joe, once with the Oculus, and then we can see our hands and we're sitting in the attic and we see each other. Of course, that would be cooler to have real time. You know, facial expression tracking and motion tracking, there's no doubt about that. But what really annoys me about this article is that the BBC, of course, mentions Second Life, of course, in the following context, and I'm quoting, in the article, there's a guy who criticizes the Podrift idea, Todd Cochrane, and he says it would be better in Second Life. And then the BBC journalist writes the following, I'm quoting, this is something of a damning comparison as virtual world Second Life has become synonymous with virtual reality's false dawn. After creating a huge buzz when it was launched in 2003, it has failed to live up to its potential other than a hardcore of loyal users view or giving it a second chance. And let me just say this, and I'll let you talk in a second, Joe, but this is what's wrong here. Who created the buzz? Who created these false expectations? The press did, including our friends at the BBC tech desk, right? And now they're all like, oh God, look at these expectations. Of course they failed. Well, if you hadn't thrown out all these false expectations and rode this wave, it wouldn't be that fault. And this is what really annoys me. This parts of the press really thrives on this simplistic narrative. They were part of the hype machine that was creating the false expectations. And now they're writing as, well, you know, it failed. It has failed to live up to its potential, its expectations that somehow we created in 2007.
The entire sentence is a bit wonky because, you know, virtual reality's false dawn, that is a massive, you know, judgment. And it's almost like, when Second Life came, everyone thought virtual reality is going to be big. Well, you know, virtual reality has been growing since the 1970s or 1980s. I think we've had about 12 virtual reality false dawns, so don't blame it all on Second Life. And it has not failed to live up to its potential. It's failed to live up to what we, what we thought it might be commercially wise, which is, you know, that's true. It didn't become this big commercial thingy. But I think it has lived up to its potential. But I guess my potential is, what I think its potential is not what, you know, the media thinks its potential is, or what commercial, business thinks it was, or what even Linden Lab thought it was. It has become a place where people can build whatever they want. And I think that is its potential. And I think Linden Lab is now finally sort of figuring it out. So the whole sentence is a bit, you know, they're making more out of it than it really was.
I think they're also absolving themselves very conveniently of their own complicity, in my mind, by writing it up with the expectations. And you're absolutely right, Joe, that you're distinguishing here between the word potential and expectation. That's a very, very important distinction to be made.
And it also completely depends how you phrase it. For instance, other than a hardcore of loyal users, few are giving it a second chance, which technically is perhaps true. But, you know, it's 11 years old and there are still a hardcore of loyal users. You know, if you put it like that, it suddenly sounds completely different. And what do you mean few are giving it a second chance? I mean, Second Life is still the same it is. It's still there. Let's see how many are going to give it a second chance when we're actually going to get a second Life.
The second chance thing is also really completely ridiculous.
I've given it 2 chances, Second Life, in my lifetime.
I gave it 10 chances counting my alts.
All those alts that you use to hang out in all those latex kinky clubs.
No, they're just there to kind of make me not feel alone. You know, they're logged into other machines. And
because
sort of...
you've got no friends. That's
exactly.
True.
They never answer me.
My only friends are alts. That has to be a t-shirt.
Oh my God. Now you make me go down to the local t-shirt store and order that. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Wear it to next time you visit Linden Lab.
Just real quick, you sent an interesting video. The cops are in Second Life. The Sacramento Police Department is using VR, and it's really cool that they know, hey, we're going to use VR. This entire video, they're showcasing what they're doing with a grant that they got, the National Justice Institute and the Sacramento Police and Fire Departments and some other Northern California agencies. And they're using Second Life for public safety training. And like I said, once or twice they use Second Life in the video narration, but the on-camera folks are always talking about VR and virtual reality. I think they understand the branding difficulties. It's interesting. Watch this thing. I think it's a great application for public safety training and, you know, for officers and non-law enforcement professionals alike. It's a great idea. What I would have to say, though, of course, is that the default duck walk is driving me crazy when I see Second Life videos.
Yeah, it's very interesting and always nice to see that someone is using Second Life for things like this. You know, we have in 1920s Berlin, we have a police force, and I can say that one of them, I'm not naming anyone, but one of them has real life, what do you call it, law enforcement experience.
Oh, cool. Why, was he in jail?
No, that's me.
Ba-dum-bum.
Ba-da-boom. Welcome. Yeah. And he's had a few interesting experiences in Berlin, and I think there's a lot of potential here, and I'm not really seeing it from the video, but there is no better experience for a police officer than to role play with people who are not also police officers.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, the completely unpredictable situations can be created in Second Life in a situation that you want with real people who probably rather enjoy that.
No, you know. Just have to go to the welcome areas and start arresting people.
Shoot a few grievers and, you know, be popular for a change.
No, but you're right. The downside of the video is that it's, you know, it's nice to see something like this, but it really doesn't depict the full potential, I think. I think if people watch it from the outside and go like, oh, interesting, they replicated sort of a warehouse situation where people can sort of role play video game style a hostage situation.
I want people with the DK2 in a room trying to talk someone into surrendering instead of shooting someone. We've had a few very scary situations in Berlin over the last 5 years, which were turned into really exciting role-playing stories. And, you know, you can do a lot more than just walk around and sit down and chat.
Moving on, Google is funding Magic Leap. I think I mentioned Magic Leap. It's really interesting.
Can they use that name? I mean, I'm sure they can, but it's I would, you know, I would talk to my lawyer if I was working, you know, if I was working for Leap Motion.
That is, in fact, interesting. Yeah,
it's the same sort of business, and you know, they use a name like that. I mean, and if you win, Google's got loads of money, I've heard.
So Google is investing in something that has to do with VR, in this case, more augmented reality, because what Magic Leap apparently does, what we know about it, there's very little that we know, but what we do know is, oh, and I'm talking like a CNN anchor now, there's nothing we know about it, but what we do know is that Magic Leap has a technology that projects images into your eye, and then you see it looks like it's floating in front of you. So this is kind of augmented reality. There is wearable technology, but it's not on your face. It's somewhere on your body, and it tracks where your eyes are looking, and it then can sort of put into space a 3D image so that your eyes decode it as actually being in that space. So in other words, no glasses, no goggles.
That it sounds very, very exciting. You know, for augmented reality, this is the holy grail. Not just augmented reality, but also virtual reality. We want to move away from wearable technology as much as possible. For VR, that will probably not be possible for quite a while. But this for augmented reality, this is very fantastic, very exciting.
This could very well turn into virtual reality, if you will, if it's possible to just completely decorate everything and morph everything around you, the real reality, into whatever you want it to be. So then, boom, there you have virtual reality. Maybe make way to a term that is maybe, you know, enhanced reality or something like that, possibly. Who knows? Talking about wearable technology, we're still, like you said, we're in the age of wearable technology. There's a new thing coming out of, I think that's China, a little haptic thing. You put it on your finger and it kind of stimulates your finger or wherever you wear it, and when you then touch virtual images in virtual reality, it gives you a haptic feedback. It kind of rubs against you with changeable roughness. I know. I'm talking about Stroker Serpentine's No Business. No, I'm actually not.
You were thinking about him again, weren't you?
Yeah, my boyfriend.
I don't see it being a huge success because, again, as we just said, it's another wearable device. I mean, you've got to put this on your hand.
And you have a cable. That's right. You have wires dangling.
Attached to the headset and, you know, all sorts of other things. But it is, of course, something that we eventually will want. You move your hand into virtual reality, and when you touch something in VR, this little device gives a little bit of a vibration or, you know, a bit of feedback, really. That's the right word for it. And I think that this is something that you have to experience to realize how awesome it is. But yeah, it's going to be very exciting to somehow manage to put that into maybe just a glove. Because if you can wear a glove, that's not, you know, that doesn't feel like you're wearing something really big and massive and things like that.
Yeah, but then you're again, we're, you know, isn't that a step backwards talking about wearable devices? These guys are, they're proposing to put their technology in different shaped objects. For example, a pen on their website. The company, by the way, is called Mirai Sense Incorporated. There's a coin-shaped thing that you're holding that gives you a sense of dimension when you touch it. I don't know how that would change its dimension so that you feel it changing. Like, let's say you have a prim and you're expanding the prim. I mean, how is this thing that you're holding actually expanding? I don't know how that will work. But with the glove, I mean, isn't that a step back?
Yeah, but if you actually want the sensation of touching in your hand, you will have to wear something. There is no technology yet that I know of that can make you feel things without actually touching it. So, you know, a glove is... I see a glove as less evasive than the gadget that they've got on the website. For this haptic feedback, that is the only reason you would want to wear something, because for everything else you can use Leap Motion-like technology.
Exactly. Speaking about Leap Motion, we're going to go to David Holtz, the founder of and the chief technology officer, co-founder of Leap Motion, in just a few minutes. We have virtual reality therapy, USC Institute for Creative Technologies mentioned there. We're going to link to this article. It was in the Wall Street Journal. The benefit of having therapy and post-traumatic stress disorder therapy in virtual reality. Interesting stuff. We've talked about it in the past. Of course, in this entire article, Second Life is not mentioned once. Second Life is mentioned, though, by an article in the MIT Tech Review by Philip Rosedale himself when he talks about his new venture, High Fidelity. Philip Rosedale explains High Fidelity in this article with a little video where he wears the Oculus goggles with the Leap Motion glued to it, and he has it in his hands, and his hands are tracked in the space. And like we said, I mean, I'm kind of jealous of that. It's not possible in Second Life right now. Hopefully in SL 2.0.
Ebbe and Philip are chatting a lot.
I mean, we know what the issue is, you know, it's really a resource decision if SL should be retrofitted at this point or if all the manpower and all the new ideas should go into the new thing. You know, that's a decision they made internally and that they're pursuing, and that's great. I think that's what I feel have about Ebbe, that he is the kind of leader who made this decision and then just kind of pursues it, which is good to know, I think. I don't want to belabor this point, but, you know, Second Life, of course, also mentioned in this article briefly sort of as the thing that never worked, which is annoying.
They talk about it in the past tense, which is interesting. Yeah, you could fly and teleport. Well, I can still do that.
It drives me up the wall.
I can imagine. But if you read the comments, people are a little bit more positive, which is quite nice because they don't seem like Second Life, fanboys and girls.
Speaking of motion tracking, moving on to my brief interview with David Holtz, the co-founder with Michael Buchwald of Leap Motion, our beloved little sensor device that can accurately track your hands now. I mean, now in VR environments with the Leap glued onto an Oculus. And by the way, full disclosure, we were sponsored by them. So every time I say the word Leap, I get $2.
What? I'm not getting anything. What?
We're not getting anything. We're getting a couple of Leap Motions and then we can give them away and sell the Leap Motions on the black market. So if you look on eBay and you see a guy named Braxter, which is not me, selling 500 Leap Motions out of the back of a truck, it's not me.
You know, there's someone out there who's going to take actually believe you and your silliness.
Well, I mean, as a socialist communist, I gotta get some income to fund the revolution. I mean, how else am I gonna do it?
On the free market.
Exactly.
Capitalist.
You know, that's how you beat capitalism. You take the free stuff from the capitalists and then you push it into their face. Win! What you said is a great idea, but the caveat is when you have your hands, it gets very, very tiring very soon if you have your hands up all the time. You know, when I tried the Leap in Second Life, there's an implementation with a third-party app. It kind of works, but your arms are getting so tired so fast.
This is something we have to experiment with, something we have to try, because I think this is potentially a very interesting solution to quite a few problems.
The interesting thing is that when you see the video with Philip Rosedale in high fidelity, you can see him, using the hands perfectly with the Leap glued to the Oculus. So that I think that is already kind of the solution, because you just have to extend them a little bit and then you could type in the air. So David Holtz created the Leap about 2 years ago, and folks might remember that there was a quick and dirty Second Life implementation by Simon Linden. Then Leap Motion let 10% of their staff go. That was not too long ago, after the device didn't meet the sales expectations. David Holtz, the boss, is quite young.
Is he handsome?
His hair is too long for you, Joe. Forget it.
Oh.
Let's start from the beginning. When did you think of the Leap? And why? What bugged you about the way we interact with computers?
Well, I mean, it started off when I was young and sort of growing up with technology. I felt like I should be better with technology than without it, but I found that wasn't always the case. It first started off when I tried to do 3D modeling on a computer, and I found that for some reason I was worse at doing that than I was actually sculpting something with my hands in art class at school. I could see really good 3D models on the computer that other people made, and I could visualize things in my mind, and I could sculpt those with my hands in real life. But the second it came from me putting what was in my head to what was on the computer, I found that there was some sort of wall, and the technology around me that was preventing a fundamental exchange from occurring. And I felt like that was the interface. So the first thing I wondered was well, how would I do this? Optimally, I would, use my hands the same way I could use something physically, but I could do something digitally, but it would be digital so I could have whatever rules I wanted. So I could undo, I could, do things in zero G, I could add material, I can remove material, I can do all sorts of stuff that I couldn't do in real life. And that sort of made me realize that that's not something that probably is just a problem for 3D modeling, but it's also a problem for something like building a spaceship or looking through a data set or doing some kind of, like that. It was a very broad thing, and that, as I got older, that only sort of became more obvious. Now we walk around with smartphones in our pockets that can do more calculations in a second than we can in our lives, but we don't really use it for anything other than a newspaper or a notepad or a 90s era phone. And it's not that the technology can't do more, that we can't do more. It's, again, very much between us and the technology around us.
You said when you were young, you still look fairly young to me. How old are you, if I may ask?
I'm 26 now. I've been frustrated with computers since I was 12. So I have many years of experience in being frustrated with technology.
I have more, but I haven't done anything about it. With Leap now, where do you see yourself? Where do you see yourself positioned in that ecosystem? Oculus for the eyes. We have the CyberRift, these guys from Austria, or the Vertrix, the omnidirectional treadmill. Where is the Leap in there?
I think it's there's sort of now, and then there's further in the future. For the moment, we're kind of in the first generation of VR right now, or the first maybe actually going to make it generation of VR, where we have sort of many devices. I have something on my face, I have a computer in front of me, I have like an Oculus webcam, maybe I have a Leap Motion, maybe I have like a controller, maybe I have a steering wheel and a joystick. It's maybe sort of a clumsy experience, but it's our first potentially real experience. So there's a lot of really great things about that. And in that type of environment, we see ourselves as both the eyes and the hands that let you interact with that world in a way that's much more similar to how you would interact with the world around you. And I think there are a lot of situations where that'll be very compelling, and there are a lot of situations where at this point in time it might not make sense. So, if your goal is to, to play World of Warcraft in VR and like do a lot of walking, you shouldn't necessarily be walking around with your hands, And if you're playing a flight sim game, you shouldn't necessarily be using your hands to have a fake joystick rather than an actual joystick. That's sort of where we are. Or you shouldn't necessarily type in the air, when you have a keyboard right in front of you. Like these sort of first generation is going to be a little bit more of a mixed bag than I think subsequent generations will be. Basically, I think the second that head mounted displays become untethered experiences, and like single device experiences where I just have a headset that's not attached to anything and I can walk around, then of course I'm not gonna carry my joystick in my pocket. I'm not gonna have holsters for Wiimotes, but I carry my hands everywhere I go. And so these types of interfaces become potentially the only game in town as stuff like this becomes increasingly mobile.
I sometimes think that we very quickly might move to contact lenses when you talk about interacting with virtual reality. What do you think about that?
The first thing we're going to see are like opaque head-mount displays with really good video pass-through. We have a Dragonfly prototype we talk about that already provides 3K resolution per eye at red, green, blue, and infrared. So you'll have those, but basically now. And then the next thing you'll see are transparent head-mounted displays that are also wide field of view. And those will be like sort of sunglasses, and they'll be really small and really thin and really awesome. Contacts are probably beyond that. Contacts are probably at least like 15 years out.
Going back to the Leap, but the Leap then remains primarily a situation at home, basically, a non-mobile situation.
Oh, no. So for a mobile situation, I don't know if you saw, we came out with a VR mount where the Leap Motion actually goes on the face pointing out. And then basically wherever, and the Leap has a bigger field of view than VR headsets. So wherever you see, it sees. So if you can see your hands, we can track your hands. And I think something like that is that's the main thing we're pushing right now with VR. And I think something like that, that's more like the long-term solution. If you have a pair of transparent augmented reality sunglasses, then, you know, there'd be tiny little dots in there that are actually sensors that are then tracking your hands. And so as you're walking through the city, you're probably seeing like both virtual and physical things sort of moving by you. And then maybe you have like a floating HUD in your local space that kind of moves with you. And then you can interact with those things as if they're physical, or even if they're digital, you know, likewise with physical things. And you'll have things that are, you'll have, you know, distinctly physical things, distinctly digital things, and then you'll have sort of digital physical things. So it's going to be really weird. I think the nature of what is digital very much begins to change in a world like that. It's no longer, you know, ones and zeros or something that doesn't look real or act real. It's something, it's just sort of a new material of the world, like wood and plastic. But it's a material with all sorts of magical properties, like it can be instantly transmuted and transmitted and all sorts of things.
The Leap is a device that is not tied to any which way reality, to real reality, to virtual reality and augmented reality, whatever merges or whatever disappears in the future.
Yeah, and you know, the technology needs eyes just like people do. And you know, we very much want to be the sensor guys. It seems unlikely that there will be 10 different companies that sell, you know, cameras, and you'll have 10 different types of cameras, you know, embedded into your headsets. There's probably going to only be one or maybe two. And whatever sensor suite they create will power all sorts of things, whether it's, you know, like eye tracking, hand tracking, body tracking, mouth tracking, environment tracking. Really, all those things can be done with the same sort of environment, you know, sensor suite. And I mean, we're happy to work with other people, you know, to do those sorts of things, but it seems unlikely. It seems like somebody will be providing the main framework for the hardware to do such a thing. And that's at the very least what we're doing right now.
Who do you see as your main competitor?
I would describe this space right now as being primarily composed of either hardware companies or software companies. And we are, I would say, the only company that's sort of both. So there are companies that make 3D cameras, and those are cool. They don't necessarily track hands. They just sort of create a 3D image of your environment. We also build software. We build 3D cameras also, but we also have a software on top of that that tracks things like hands. And our software could work on our hardware just as easily as it could work on anybody else's hardware. Although right now we believe we offer the best performance and price for such a total solution. And then there are companies that build software, and most of those companies don't work with 3D cameras at all. But you know, they usually work with like a webcam. And so they like the second you, like, it depends on what, I guess, what you say. So if by competitor you mean people who can draw a hand into a virtual reality space and track that in real time with like less than 100 milliseconds of latency, I would say there's no one right now.
You made this great point that you were frustrated with how we interact with the machines. And a lot of people share that. But a lot of people are maybe not ready. And you guys had to lay off some folks because you felt you might sell more than you actually did. And there's so many people stuck with the keyboard and mouse paradigm, and I think they're fundamentally afraid to kind of give that up. What do you think needs to happen to accelerate that process?
Well, I mean, it was certainly things like virtual reality are really interesting markets where you sort of can't have a experience without a new input device. Whereas something like the PC is very much a mature thing. And it's not that you can't have motion control in a very compelling, interesting, deep way, but, you know, it's a lot more work to replace everything that's already there. The nice thing about these new markets like virtual reality is that it's very much a clean slate where a new input device can define a complete experience. Whereas on a PC, you may have like a mouse, a keyboard, a leap motion, a touch screen, a trackpad, and we're like the fourth or fifth input device. So it's very difficult for us to sort of take that experience that you have and really make it into something that's a very refined, controlled thing. So it depends on what people want to do. If people want to like write text and, you know, click tiny buttons, then, you know, using a leap motion probably isn't the right thing for them to do. We've sold quite a few devices. We've sold hundreds of thousands of devices, you know, more than almost any startup has sold of anything in recent history. So we kind of just had to guess a number and staff up accordingly. So, you know, that's a difficult thing that any hardware company has to do. But I would say that, you know, it's been a successful device. It's sort of part of a longer continuum of evolving interfaces with evolving devices. We knew that regardless of what the platform was in the future, people were going to build the software on PCs. Imagine if the first leap motion device that you saw was a phone. I don't know how anybody would develop software for that. It would be incredibly difficult because they'd be programming software on a computer, then uploading it onto a phone and not even being able to really, you know, it'd be a very difficult development cycle. You know, the leap motion is definitely like an ultimate developer device at the absolute minimum. You know, that's wildly, wildly successful.
That was David Holtz from Leap Motion. Like I said, I hope we'll get him back. Let's move on to our guest for the rest of the hour. My God, the time is flying. The guest for the rest of the hour is none other than Chris Lehman, the gardener of Second Life, if you will, the Zen master of virtual plants. I actually want to continue the show where we have old bees on talking about sort of the past, present, and future of SL. Where does SL stand now in this new ecosystem of VR? Welcome, Chris Lehman. How are you? Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thank you very much.
And Chris is in the Philippines. Of course, the internet there is even worse than in San Francisco.
Yeah. And it's still really weird to think of myself as an old bee.
Right. I was just going to ask, when were you born?
Created the avatar in 2007, which incidentally, I came into Second Life for the first time because of a podcast live meet in Second Life.
What was the podcast?
I can't remember, but that they had I used to listen to them every week, and they announced that they were going to do their first virtual meetup in Second Life, and I was like, oh, okay. And yeah, I bought the full SL package within 1 week, and it was over from there.
Were you sold the second you arrived?
Not the second I arrived, but probably a couple hours in.
You came and you stayed. And that's the question I ask everyone. Why did you stay? Did you right away see the potential, what it could be? Was that apparent to you kind of right away?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, when you first came into SL, I mean, I was surrounded by all these, you know, crazy buildings and clubs and this entire meetup where there's people from all over the place just hanging out, and you'd have to be blind not to see the possibilities that were there. Everything around you was the possibility.
Why then is it that so many people don't get it? I mean, apparently the last number that we know is about 400,000 people per month sign up to Second Life, and they stick around for 5 minutes, and then they say, "Ah, no, that's not for me." So these are these all blind people, Chris? What the hell is going on?
No, I think it really depends on what your expectations are when you come in. I had absolutely no expectations, so I couldn't be let down. All I could see were the possibilities and what everyone else had done. If I came in thinking that this was going to be one thing and I didn't see it immediately, then yeah, then I might have been let down for, you know, whatever expectations I had. But no, I came in without any, you know, preconceived notions. Nothing was promised except to meet a whole lot of people at this meetup, and that part exactly happened.
And it is important to find a place that that you like. You find somewhere in Second Life where you think, this is interesting, this is nice.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, if you're going somewhere for a special event, you've already found it.
It was one of those cases where they had said, you know, log in, message this person, we'll teleport you over. And that was it. I didn't have any trouble you know, trying to figure out what the heck I was doing or whatnot. I clicked a button, I showed up, and then there was, you know, 20 people there telling me what I could do.
As you know, it's now being proposed by Abbott to have these orientation experiences that have really catered to an interest that they find out prior, right? So you tell them their interest, and then they funnel you into these orientation experiences. And I remember Alex was saying that is not a good idea, because when you decide out of a menu of 5, 6, 7 options what are you interested in, you're excluding all the other stuff. But if you would actually see these other things that you just excluded with the survey, then you might actually stay. So it's in a way trying to, you know, minimize your interests, and then that might also maybe not work.
If you're picking from a menu of what you're interested in, you obviously have to see the other things that are possible that they're offering off the bat. Obviously they can't offer everything, but, you know, say right now I get friend suggestions from Second Life. So why couldn't there be an interest suggestion?
You sort of have to create a program of steps, and you think this is everything that new users have to understand as quickly as possible when they arrive. First is find a place that you like. Second is realize that it's been all being built by people and that you can build it as well. You realize that, hang on, Second Life has massive potential, even if I don't see anything I like yet.
Chris, you are a creative person, so this is something that appeals to you. But put yourself in the shoes of somebody who just wants to kind of, you know, enjoy polished content. I mean, I'm the same way as you are. I mean, when I first came in, the chaos and you know, these half-built houses and stuff floating in the air really appealed to me, because it signaled to me, wow, this is this giant sandbox. I want to be part of this. But if you will kind of intimidated by that or even put off, what can be done for the folks that don't have that creative bent?
Talking about, you know, two different people can look at the exact same content. One person might, you know, let's just say for the sake of argument, it's your half built, you know, badly constructed house. So one person could look at it and say, oh, this is crap. What is this thing? And then go. And the other person can say, oh my gosh, you can do this, and get completely inspired. You know, being in Second Life for, you know, 7 years, I've seen all those types of people. The ones that, you know, see things and get inspired and want to do, others that see things and are completely turned off.
But how do you get those? I mean, how do you determine who is who? Basically, in the lab, in a way, has to have this like very short psychological survey, I guess, in order to determine how to funnel these people into these different avenues.
Maybe you could present some messages in phrasing that's like, you know, do you think you can do better, blah blah blah. I don't know if there's like some kind of way to cue the person to say, oh, you mean I can do this?
That would be an interesting tutorial. Yeah, they show you like a crappy house, like what does it make you feel? What does this crappy house make you feel? Choose A.
How does this make you feel?
I want to fix it. B. I want to get out of here. But Joe, how would you propose? I mean, how do we get people in that are not necessarily the creators, but could have an immense, you know, value getting out of this world?
Well, I think, again, by showing them this massive selection of possibilities, of places where they can go, you know, without having to build stuff themselves. If you tell these people that everything they see is built by people like them, if they are creative, they will think, oh, that means I can build stuff. If they don't want to create, they will probably think, wow, so, you know, I get to explore the imagination of all these different people. And, you know, I realize and I am fascinated by the idea that I am walking through someone's brain.
Well, I was going to say it's a really interesting point, because I've made some alts over the past few years, not all the time. And one of the prior, you know, newbie experiences, and I think this was early on, I don't know how long it lasted, But, you know, you went through the basic orientation of how to move around, et cetera, and then they showed you how to build things. You could sit there and res a print if you wanted to. And then I recently made an alt probably a couple months ago, and there was no building. What might work is a split in that path. You know, on the orientation island, after, you know, WASD to move, blah, 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 yeah. You're following this path and you have a split. You know, you have how to create your own experience in Second Life. You know, enjoy, you know, the experiences, you know, already made.
What if when you start your first new Second Life, there are 3 or 4 or 5, I don't know, buttons in your screen, one that says basics. If you click that, you go somewhere where you learn to walk and touch things and operate things. Mm-hmm. And there's a button called build or create. You touch that and you go to a sandbox where you can build and create. And then there's one called explore, which will take you to the destination guide where you can find a place to go to. And all these buttons, you can just, you know, they have a little X so you can turn them off if you say, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to build. I just want to go shopping. Oh, there's not a button, shopping. You know, all these options are there on your screen that show you all the possibilities in Second Life, and you can choose to go and test them out. Yeah. Or you can just, you know, close them.
And not only limit that to when you first come into SL, make that a permanent part of the client. So at any time when I've made one decision, you know, I wanted to see, you know, what other people did, so I went and hit the destination guide or whatever. But at any point I want to, I can call up that initial menu on my screen.
If it's technically feasible, why not combine this? I don't know if that's possible, but if you disengage buttons, or if you engage one button, the UI changes a little bit and excludes certain things that might be confusing. How about that? Because what's been pointed out over and over, you know, if you're not a creator, then all this stuff is totally confusing. You remember, Chris, they had the basic viewer and the advanced viewer. That didn't really work under M. Linden, but I think that might be cool. If you just have sort of a scaled-down viewer, when you say shopping, it puts shopping up front and center. You can buy linens, you can spend it, but all the build stuff is gone.
Having like different modes, or, you know, I was talking to somebody and I called it tabs at one point. But if you had, you know, your building tab and everything disappeared off your screen except building tools. And and then you had, you know, when you click the shopping button, your entire client gets focused around the marketplace or, you know, in world, whatever. But it's all about shopping. From using, say, Photoshop, they have different modes like that. You have a menu at the top, a drop-down menu, and based on what it is you really want to do, you can pick, and it'll change the UI to match that, but it's always up there in the corner.
I was wondering, Chris, what do you think is the significance of Second Life today in this VR renaissance? How can LindaLab take advantage of this new infused interest in virtual reality?
The only thing I can think of that they can do is, I believe what they're currently trying to do is coming up with this next generation platform that will, you know, I assume take advantage of a lot of the technology that's currently available today. Like you said before, though, I mean, all these things that people are talking about right now, and wouldn't it be cool if, blah, 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 it's already there. If people don't know about it, you know, I'm not sure where the failure is. I mean, as a company, can LindaLab list every single, you know, thing that is relevant with Second Life right now?
I can think of a funny commercial where you just have one guy with goggles, generic goggles, talking to some other guy and says, I can do gambling. Done. The other guy says, done. You know, it's like, I can do podcasting. Done.
How about very flashy animation, gambling, XXX entertainment, shopping, role-playing, gaming, creating, etc. And then the screen goes black and it says, been there, done that, Second Life.
It would be where they, you know, they get all the people together. They're just like, well, what do you expect out of a virtual world experience? And all these people just start spitting out things. And every single one of them is already done in Second Life. And it's like, okay. Then it fades to black and it's like Second Life.
Been there, done that. I think that's a really good slogan for Second Life. Been there, done that, doing it.
I would do this right now, a simple 30-second internet commercial, boom. But what Chris said, I also think about man on the street type thing. You just walk around with your microphone and with goggles and you go to people in a supermarket and go like, what do you expect from a virtual reality experience? They go, me? I don't know, maybe a vacation to Hawaii. Been there, done that.
I want to fly a dragon.
Been there, done that. Been there, done that, doing it. Second Life.
So you do all this, right? You do flying dragon, you do like, Hawaii vacation, you do role play, you do fantasy role play, you do science fiction, you do...
And then you get a dirty old man.
Flying penises. Been there, done that.
Been there, done that. That would be
every single time they say something, you cut to the Second Life,
exactly
where it is already, and someone says something else, cut to the next one.
I think this every time I see another Kickstarter for another virtual reality game or thingy, and I think, oh, that's nice, we've been doing that for over a decade, you know, the VR cinema, diving underwater.
Right, VR cinema, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm the first to admit that it is far from perfect in Second Life, but it's been done. We've been doing it. I mean, and better.
The problem is that I think the people who are dominating the conversation now, the new, you know, hardware whiz kids and stuff like that, everybody is so obsessed with that real VR, true VR, can only happen with hardware interfaces. And again, I mean, we're not saying that we don't want that stuff. It is amazing to have that. But we have had an immersive relationship with this world for a long time, and it is possible without the goggles. And that point is not really being discussed much in the current debate right now.
I want to travel back in time and have an immersive experience with your Oculus Rift DK2. Been there, done that.
But what you were saying, though, the graphical expectations are huge. You can quite easily show people any of those, you know, ideas. It may not look the best. So I think along with, you know, what these people are saying, you know, it'd be cool if we could do this, it'd be cool if we could do that. I think they're also seeing it through, you know, the modern expectation of extremely fancy graphics.
Well, that's true, but every time I show a very nicely made screenshot or video of Second Life, people are amazed about how good it looks, because Second Life can look really cool, but of course you need a good computer and decent internet, which is something that nobody complains about with the newest games.
You don't actually need like the latest generation technology, though, to run Second Life, you know, at full capacity. I had a really brilliant experience about 2 weeks ago, because somebody had bought a product from my store, and there was some glass involved in the design, and it looked really nice in my screenshots. And they were saying, you know, I guess my computer isn't up to snuff. I can't, you know, really see those, you know, reflections. And I was like, well, you do have to have the advanced material setting turned on. And they're like, well, my things are up to ultimate. And I was like, oh, just, you know, go into your graphics, click that on. And the next thing that came back from his text window was OMG. And then a hail of screenshots of shadows, materials.
Oh,
he had
shadows.
He had no clue. And but his first thing was like, you know, I don't think my computer can handle that. And it turned out, you know, he was on a 5-6-year-old computer, and it handled it perfectly fine.
Like Joe and I discussed in the past, remember, Joe, the journalist who came in and, you know, she talked to like one person and they all went to empty Sims, and the screenshots she posted were really low fidelity. it's scandalous when a journalist goes in and doesn't even look at, hey, where are my settings at? Let me see how this thing runs on settings at 11, right? I mean, it's scandalous.
Especially if it's a tech journalist.
A tech journalist, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what I've got when I play, you know, I'm a hardcore gamer, as they call it these days. But when I play quite a few games, the first screen I get is, these are the settings that we think your computer can handle.
Good point.
Why doesn't Second Life do that? First thing you start, it says, this is your system. These are the, you know, the settings that we think are really good for you. But if you want, you can tweak them up a bit, things like that. Because right now, pretty much everything's turned off when you start, which is nice because it's less laggy if you've got an old computer. But if you've got a computer that can handle it, there are people in Second Life for weeks or months even before they discover that there are shadows.
Guys, I'm looking at the clock here. We have to have you back, Chris. This is a great conversation, but I have to cut you off rudely because we're running out of time.
Not a problem.
Second Life, been there, done that. That's the best I've ever heard. Doing it right now. We're going to sign off. I want to just say what I will do this weekend. I will not go into Second Life, but I will read a book about Second Life sent to me by JJ Ziffenwee, who runs the 3D campus at the University of Western Australia. And the University of Western Australia, they have done tremendous outreach in art and machinima. They're holding these competitions. They're giving away millions of Linden dollars in Second Life. They've done a lot for the arts. But most recently, JJ issued the Freedom Project book, which the Freedom Project was a project where people with disabilities were creating art and films and kind of put the theme of their disability or chronic illness into these pieces of art. And that's contained in the book. And he sent me a physical copy of the book. It's just tremendous to hear these stories. That's another thing that just gets discounted, you know, today with VR talking about, it's great for people with disabilities. Well, we've been, Jesus Christ, 11 years. Come on. It drives me nuts. So this book is great. You can purchase it. I think it's $20. This is a great book. Get it. That's it. What are you doing? Are you going sailboating again, Joe, this weekend, or any recommendations?
No, I'm celebrating my birthday this weekend, so I'm just going to be drinking and causing trouble and being silly.
Oh, awesome. Real life, Second Life birthday, both?
Real life.
Oh, never ask a lady how old she is, so I'm not going to ask.
42.
I thought you invited me to your 29th birthday, Joe. What the hell?
No, that was you.
Hey.
And nobody's falling for it.
Internally, I'm 16. Always will be.
12.
Well, that's what she said.
That is so wrong. I think that will get you arrested these days.
And not in Kentucky. I can marry at 12. We're going out today.
I don't want to know.
Okay, so we're going out today, and I just do this to torture you, Joe, because we're going out with the trailer of the Zero Theorem, the latest Terry Gilliam movie that you hate and I love.
No, I didn't hate it. Wasn't that impressed.
It's about being overwhelmed. It's about being stretched thin by meaningless entertainment, the inability to connect. To me, best of all, the very obvious ambivalence that Terry Gilliam has in regards to virtual reality, the really, really depicted in the typical Gilliam fashion in this film. We talked about this last week. We will talk about this film again, but now we're going out with some trailer audio. If you catch it in a local theater or buy it on iTunes, just do it. That's it. Goodbye, Joe.
Auf Wiedersehen.
We always wanted to feel different.
Unique. Objective analysis, however, concluded that we are but one in many single worker bees.
Everyone's getting rich, except you.
What seems to be the problem?
We are dying.
Who's we?
Us, ourselves.
But there's only one of you.
So it would appear.
Right, Quinn, how's it hanging?
Is it hanging at all well?
Aye? Sorry.
A fear of death, fear of life, fear of open spaces, fear of people.
We fear nothing most of all.
Are you trying to be difficult?
Been handpicking talent to crunch it since before I was hired. Nobody lasts. It's a guaranteed burnout project. Zero theorem. All very hush hush.
Zero must equal 100%. Good luck.
I give him 2 weeks.
Are you here alone?
We're generally everywhere alone.
You think my dress is incredibly ugly?
My dad used to buy me these incredibly ugly clothes to keep the boys away. Only made me want to get naked.
Excuse us.
Zero must equal 100%.
Where is this place?
All in your mind. We're safe here.
Zero must equal 100%.
What happened to you, man?
Life happens to everybody, all right?
The only reason you're not laughing is because you're a punchline.
You have made a very big mistake.
We don't believe you.
Why would you want to prove that all is for nothing?
Close your eyes, and now picture it in your mind.
I know we're connected somehow. Just come with me.
We always wanted to feel a reason for being, the meaning of our life.
We can be together for real.
The Drax Files Radio Hour with Joe Yardley is a weekly production of Basic Drax Entertainment. The show is supported by Leap Motion, SL Go By On Live, Stitcher, Bot Girls Identity Circus, Carvel Design, Vicar Creations, Humanoid Animations, Escapades, Botanical, Death Row Designs, Angel Red Couture, Fallen Gods Incorporated, Blue Moon Enterprises, What's Next, Avacon, and Landscapes Unlimited. Contact the show via Skype, Draxfiles, Avatar Draxfiles, or email radio@draxfiles.com.